From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Chad Beter.
And I'm Andrew Richards.
And welcome to Defrag Tools. We're back for week two, rapping old school about, I sound really white when I say that, we're rapping old school about networking.
Yeah. We're kind of getting a little bit more into the more recent days. You know,
yeah.
We're going to talk about some of the features that came in Vista.
Yeah.
Rather than us reminiscing about what happened in LAN-MAN. Actually, we do have something from LAN-MAN to talk about.
LAN-MAN. I remember we talked to Larry Osterman. He worked on LAN-MAN.
Yeah.
Go back and watch that episode where we toured the
100.
Was it 100?
No.
It was, we toured the Microsoft Archives. It was pretty cool with Larry.
Yeah, it's around there.
He had all kinds of great old stories about LAN-MAN days and all that good stuff.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah, anyway. All right, so what do we got?
So we're talking about networking. So what we're going to start with is RSS, TCP chimney offload, and TCP receive window. Mm-hmm. There is a command to show you the current configuration, and I'm going to show, I have to read it off the whiteboard, because every single time I try to remember this, I forget what it is. NetSH. So NetSH is the shell. It's like a DOS prompt for networking, mm-hmm. and you can configure anything in it. Personally, I'm scared of it. It's too hard to remember, and I just follow what other people tell me to do. It's like disk part. I'm not willing to go in there either.
Oh, come on. Disk part's great.
Yeah, but I don't want to wipe my disk.
Well, it's a danger, yeah.
Actually, we should do a show on disk part and talk about how to do boot from VHD.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Because and then also all the BCD edit stuff.
We've used that in the past on the show. It's very convenient for demos and things.
Yeah, that's how our PCs boot. Yeah. So anyway, NetSH, Network Shell, we're looking at the interfaces. We're looking at the TCP protocol. So TCP is on top of IP. The other one's UDP. And we're going to show the parameters that are affecting globally all of the interfaces. That's a lot to look at. All right, so what we're going to particularly look at is receive side scaling, chimney, and receive window. All right, and so just we're going to do a quick overview of each. We have I did a squirrel around, and I found this pretty cool KB article that explains it quite nicely. So KB article 95103037. Getting ahead of myself. And so receive side scaling, let's do that one first since it's at the top of the list. So by the era of around Vista and stuff, we were getting to the point where the amount of network speed we had was overwhelming the TCP stack, mm-hmm. right? And so prior to RSS coming out, traffic came in and the interrupts turned into DPCs, and they were always scheduled on the same CPU.
Mm-hmm.
And that was done because the drivers were not multi-threading or multi-core safe. They weren't doing all the appropriate locking and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think in Vista, we introduced RSS ability. And what that says is I am multi-thread safe, and you can spread your traffic across CPUs.
So it's something that the driver can like flag to us that it has this capability.
And roughly you're saying I've gone from single-threaded to multi-thread safe. That's mm-hmm. roughly all you've said.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a comment. I mean, it's on by default if a driver supports it. You'll see that people will say, oh, turn RSS off if you're seeing bug checks. So if the system's crashed and they've identified it on a driver, as a mitigation, people will change it to disabled. And
maybe suspect you have a buggy network driver or something.
Yeah. And so I have a whole lot of scripts here to show you how to do it. So for example, if you want to enable it, I have to look this up every time. There's the command to enable it, NetSH interface. TCP, and this instead of show, which is what we had before, we have set global and then RSS on. Disables converse, the obvious change of that. And then default, there's actually a default keyword. Now these just represent registry keys, so you could do it by registry key pure.
Mm-hmm.
And so default will do whatever the OS wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
So you should have it turned on by default. It gives you better performance. You don't burn up CPU zero. It tends to be CPU zero. It doesn't tend to be a separate offset. It's a great thing. It spreads the load, makes things more snappy. And particularly if you're at the gigabit stage, you would be foolish to try to cram it onto one CPU.
Right.
Chimney, even better. So I don't happen to have a the devices for this, but Chimney is offload. So when you get the packet, you have to look at, you need to inspect it and say, does this make sense? Are the bits in the right order? Is the checksum and everything else appropriately valued? Is there any overrun, stuff like that? And that takes a lot of effort of the CPU to work that out.
Yeah.
And so the memory is coming, it's come off the network, it's gone into a DMA buffer, direct memory access buffer, which is memory that the PCI bus can share with main memory address space.
So that the network card throws some data into main system memory in a DMA buffer.
Then it fires, then it has to fire an interrupt, which has to then queue a DPC, and then the DPC has to run, and then it has to parse this data.
Look at it,
and
figure out what to do.
It has to parse it using x86 or ARM or whatever language, which may not be inherently the fastest way of doing it. Mm-hmm. Much like a CPU is not as good at doing graphics as a GPU is, the dedicated CPU on NICs can be better at that type of stuff.
And specialized hardware acceleration.
Yeah. Yes. And so some network cards, and particularly when you're looking at the 10 gigabit optic fiber ones and stuff like that.
Yeah, you'll see this on servers and things a lot.
Yeah. They have the offload, and so the compute, instead of doing the DMA, the interrupt, the DPC, and waiting for the stack to go up to tcp.sys, it does all of that inside the network card. And you say, well, is that safe? Is it not? That KB article has a really nice list of how much of that interops with firewall software and antivirus software and all that stuff. And so there is a really good balance there. Quite complex, quite advanced, but you can offload a huge amount. And so particularly when you've got these machines that have maybe 5 or 10 gigabit things, there just simply isn't enough CPU power to do that, as well as actually what the request actually is.
And do all your other work on the computer as well.
Yeah, and so you can offload all that. And particularly when it comes to, there's a lot of SAN technologies these days.
iSCSI.
That type of stuff.
Yeah, definitely want to minimize the overhead when you're using a network, an Ethernet network, as your disk storage.
Yeah. And even with, I forget what it's called, but there's an offload to SAN where you say, I'm reading from this SAN and I'm writing to this folder, and it actually tells the SAN, don't even talk to me.
Just do it.
That's the next evolution. I mean, we've gone from RSF to scale it up, and then we had Chimney to move it to the CPU, and now there's protocols that say, hey, SAN, you're actually talking to yourself in the end, just work it out internally. Don't even put it on the wire.
Just copy from there to there and let me know when you're done.
Yeah. There's all these other ones. The other one I'm going to point out is Receive Window Auto Tuning Level, which is also known as the TCP/IP Receive Window. Mm-hmm. This is dear to my heart because it actually reflects the latency of the internet. And so what this represents is the acts and the acknowledgements of TCP packets that are on the wire. Mm-hmm. And so when you're transmitting something, you transmit a certain number of kilobytes onto the wire, and then you stop transmitting because you're waiting for the acknowledgements to come back from the foreign server. Mm-hmm. Now, the window used to be hard-coded in the XP days, which is where my knowledge of it comes in, where it was quite small. Mm-hmm. And if you're in a high latency environment, and for me, that was from Australia to America, so it's a 400 millisecond round trip, right? And so you put the stuff out in the wire at broadband speed, which is pretty decent, which means you're pushing it away from you quite fast, so you're not buffering it onto the wire. So you can fill up that buffer of send requests quite fast, and then the ACK has, it's hit LA, it's hit New York, there's a lot of data centers in Ontario, in Canada, so that's nearly dead opposite of the planet.
Yeah.
You're 500-600 milliseconds away just purely by distance, and that's assuming you go by sea, not by satellite, which is way worse. By the time it gets there and comes back, the receive window, not only is the receive window full, but the timeout has kicked in and it goes, you didn't get my packet,
and it starts resending it.
And so as the original one comes back, the send is actually going, it gets to the server, it goes, you're an idiot, I've already sent you that packet. Right. Or worse, it sends you the packet again, doubling your download.
Right.
And then this one arrives, it goes, oh, that was the one I was looking for. Mm-hmm. Then the second one arrives and it goes, I'm a bit confused now.
And then you get like a TCP reset or something.
Yeah, and it goes around. And so, I mean, back in the day, I know that I had it set to FFFF, which is, 10,000 in hex, so 64K. Mm-hmm. I changed it to, I think that was the default, I changed it to pure FFFFs, you know, way more than I should have, but I changed it to pure Fs. And I could get about a 1-to-3 ratio. And so if I could download, say, maybe 100 megabytes in whatever time period it was, with it set to 64K, I could download 300 megabytes in the same period, purely by making my window, my willingness to have a bigger loss on the line before it retransmits. Mm-hmm. And that's what this all comes down to. And there's a registry key for it for legacy, which I have here. Global max TCP window size.
If you're still using Windows XP, which you should not be, by the way.
And so what this does is when you enable it, it pays attention to this resend and it modifies the buffer size so that it gets bigger and bigger and tries to minimize the amount of resends based on the latency.
Right, so that's the auto-tuning got much better in subsequent.
Yeah, and I think that was Vista. I don't think it was even 7. Yeah, I think it was Vista they introduced that. Mm-hmm. It's not on by default. So if you're in Australia, well, it's not on default for me at least anyway. If you're in Australia, I would set that and there's if you're anywhere where your primary internet usage is far, so far I'm talking Europe to the US, or US is working to Europe a lot, I would set this, and here's the command for it. And all these commands I'll shove on the bottom of the show notes. Mm-hmm. But that's what that does. And you will find, particularly when you've got lots of small packets, which is what you get a lot with things like messaging and stuff like that. All these tiny, any more things for me, and all this AJAX type stuff.
Yeah.
You get lots of little tiny packets on the wire, and it does matter, and it does build up. TCP receive window is kind of cool.
Pesky speed of light. So we got to do something about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to write my congressman.
It's all Einstein's fault. He limited it, right?
Right.
So talking about routing, let's look at routing, right? And so there's a command called traceroute. Some people use this a lot to say, well, why have I got limited on my icon down here? So let's actually choose something on the other side of the planet. So in Australia, Microsoft has a partnership to repeat the MSN.com. So MSN.com is an American-centric site. Mm-hmm. Channel 9 happens to be a big TV station in Australia, so they partnered with Microsoft, so there's 9 MSN where it comes to.
Not our Channel 9, a different Channel 9.
Different Channel 9, which is the one, this is the one that continually throws everybody. Mm. And so let's trace that guy. And we're going to see it go through all the nice, beautiful 10 gigabit network inside Microsoft and make all
nice slow ping times there, milliseconds.
And then you're going to see this go across the Pacific, and you're going to see this getting slower and slower. So we're still within all the Microsoft networks, and we're moving around the planet somehow. 200 is Australia, or 190. Those numbers look more of Australia based. Yeah, and the numbers are going up.
So now we're
getting to the Microsoft. Oh, so we got to Sydney. Here we go. So we're up to 170 each way. Mm-hmm. And you can see it getting slower, and then AAPT is a big our telco in Australia, so they're obviously using that backbone between Sydney. Now I believe 90% still is hosted in Adelaide, which it is, here it is, ADE. Adelaide is at the bottom in the middle, and so it's about 1,000 miles to the west of Melbourne and about 3,000 miles to the west of Sydney. If you want to like put America on top of Australia, it's kind of like Texas, and we came in at maybe Washington D.C. or New York, and then we've probably got to the end of it. And you can see the distance here. So
you can kind of see the geography just based on the ping times.
Yeah, and if I actually bring up, not that many people do that far away. I mean, it could be worse. We could be in Boston, and that would add another 50 or so milliseconds. Mm-hmm. And you'll see that it's going to have a very boom, 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 boom. And that's all these 180 millisecond delays, right? All this bang, bang, that very, very jumpy, jumpy, jumpy experience. And so if you are a web developer, you should be aware of your target market.
Yeah.
And its distance. And this is a classic example of that. And also, I'm going to point a finger at game developers here. I'm a big fan of the Settlers game series, rather than the Settlers board game series, which I'm also a fan of. But the Settlers game series, they made an oversight. When they released it, they had the DRM servers in Ontario, mm-hmm. and Ontario only. But because of, games track their speed to the connection, mm-hmm. well, when they launched it in Australia, the value was set lower than the TCP latency time. Oh. And so it said, sorry, my DRM server is too far away, something's wrong, and so you can never log in. Yeah. Now, obviously, it was a big thing on the news, and they patched it the next day and all that stuff, but it was just an oversight of...
Testing fail.
Yeah. And so be aware of that type of stuff. Now, Microsoft's done a lot in this space. I mean, there's now data centers in Singapore, there's data centers in Sydney, there's data centers in Melbourne, there's data centers all over the planet, and it's all about geographic delay and segmenting markets into appropriate times. Mm-hmm. And so just traceroute's a good way of just checking that stuff quickly and working out the distances. So 9msn.com, for most people on the planet, it's probably going to be one of the most remote things in the world. If you're in Australia, you know this, you're used to it just being slow. In fact, the first time you ever come to the US, you go, oh my, it's fast here. it's one of those things you just are used to, right?
You're used to, going to sites that are based here.
Latency. So associated with that is ping. So let's do the same thing, and we can kind of get the same idea. Now, this guy may or may not respond to ping. Now, ping is an ICMP protocol, mm-hmm. and so it's one of those protocols that isn't guaranteed to be routable. And so, and in this case, ICMP is turned off. You can add minus T on it. I'm just going to, to round off the ping command, you can add minus T to perpetually do this nonstop. Otherwise, it does it after 4. Great way of saying, has my machine booted yet? And you just put it on minus T, and it will have IPs, it starts rebooting, it requests times out.
Right.
And then when it comes back as IP addresses, you know that you're kind of at the point where you might be able to RDP back to it.
And you can do a ping -4 or -6 as well.
You can force the protocol?
You can force it to do IPv6.
And I think, I don't know if there's going to be a 6 on this.
It doesn't
but
have it.
I can choose, I don't know, one of my machines. So there's
there
the 6.
You just get the six, IPv6. Or IPv4.
And then there's the 4. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things about the remote stuff, and Mark talked about this with when he was visiting, is ping isn't very good at non-ICMP analysis, right? And so PS ping, same thing, roughly the same idea, has way more statistics, has way more stuff like that. Mm. But we can ping something. So instead of doing, we use PS ping instead of ping. And this is going to hit the same problem that it's going to hit the ICMP thing. But what you can do is you can put :80 on here and change the port. And so what he's going to do is he's going to connect to that thing and just say, okay, I finally connected, and that's the delay. And so between here and 9MSN, it is it's only 4 milliseconds now, the actual data transmit. That's a bit weird. I would have thought it'd been longer than that. But you can get the speed, and so that we can go to...
there may be some caching, since you connected to port 80.
Yeah.
You may be hitting some web cache.
Oh, yeah, I could be hitting a proxy somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure I'm hitting some internal proxy
Microsoft. We're hitting a web proxy, which is why it's so fast.
Yeah. So ping and PS ping. PS ping has the ability to actually set up a client-server relationship, so you run it twice, and so you actually can do bandwidth tests and all that stuff. We'll link back to that show for that. Next one, so we've done traceroute and PS ping, which is more about latency. As far as connections go, there is the netstat command. You can say, just connect to it, and as things... Oh, there you go, I'm still connected by 9MSN, it's still hanging around. That's the history of connections on your box. If you just want to see everybody who's connected right now, there's all that. Netstat, it's, I don't use it that much. I don't really need to know who's connected and who's not. Mm-hmm. Usually I fall down to other commands, which is what we're about to show. So normally it's things like, I want to delete a file on my hard drive and it says it's in use, right? Mm-hmm. And it says it's in use by system. And you go, why? And one of the main reasons, I haven't got anything to share, but so one of the things it can be is you are sharing out files, right? And someone's holding a lock from some remote place on a file. And say you've got a share on your box where you do releases to.
Yeah.
But someone's is actually running the exe from the release share and you're trying to replace it.
Yeah.
There's a couple of ways around that. You can rename the file because once it's mapped like that, it's irrelevant what the name is on disk. The handle in the kernel is actually to the object rather than to the name. And so you can rename it, it will work in place, and then you can put the new one there. Hence why you on all these shares, you see .old and .backup.
Somebody had a lock and they just...
Yeah. Yeah. If you are on the machine with it, you can actually do net file. It will list them all.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can actually, you'll get a whole lot of numbers and you can go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and you go, and it will kill them. It will close the file.
And whoever's connected will get an error or something.
Yeah, say network path broken or something. So netfile is great for that. Associated with file sharing is what am I actually sharing, right? And so netshare shows you that. I haven't got any specific ones on my box. All of these have the dollar sign on the end, so they're all hidden, mm-hmm. Which represent the standard ones you have for configuration, mm-hmm. And normal configuration. Because we have System Center, the CCM one turns up. When it comes to...
And some people may not know that, but if you create a file share, you put a dollar sign at the end, it won't show up.
Yeah, so...
It's a hidden share.
And actually, we can actually do that. So I can do net view this machine. This is a Richard X1, because it's an X1 carbon.
You're missing an H.
Ricardo. And there's no entries in the list, but I can go net share c dumps as dumps. What's my way around? Equals dumps. No, wrong way.
Dumps.
Dumps equals. And now.
And now, of course,
it's there.
And if somebody did a net view, they would see that. If they did a net view of your machine,
you can see that.
Right.
And
but
then,
if you did the dollar sign after the dumps, it would.
Yeah, work. And so let's do that. So let's do, So it's dump is there, there's defrag, all right, shared, and then we can do. And it's disappeared.
All you see is the one.
Net share, and I actually do this when I. This is how I tend to delete shares, actually. I tend to jump through, every once in a while, you know how you sometimes your box gets a little bit share obsessed? You've made way too many for way too many bad ideas.
Yeah.
Particularly when you make one that's temporary for someone. I make one called Chad for 5 minutes so you can copy a file. You forget what you've got. And so I tend to, you jump down to the command prompt, if I can type. Do net share, you go, oh, that one's rubbish, that one's rubbish, that one's rubbish. And then you go, net share, dumps, delete. And it's just gone.
Gone. Quick way to do it.
Sure, you can go through the UI and do it that way. And you have to find the folder and go properties and then click the share tab and then advanced sharing and then go delete. Or you could just type it in 5 seconds.
A little quicker, yeah.
So what? The net command actually came out of LentLAN Manager.
It's pretty old,
1980 or something.
Really old.
You can actually get some calls. So let's go through each of them. Accounts, this is your policy. It tells you what this machine requires from that time of point of view. Yeah. Information about the computer. And actually, you can add or remove this computer from a domain.
This is kind of back when, you know, Landman was originally DOS-based, right?
So Landman was OS2-based.
OS2. So it was very command line driven, and all that sort of still around here.
Actually, if I can be tempted, I'll find a picture of, I'll take a photo of my Landman's in my office.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we saw that when we went there. Yeah.
I'll put the picture at the bottom. Config, and so you can see it from the two sides of the story. So workstation is you connecting to things, and server is you people talking to you. That net file thing, if you have more than, say you got 50 people on it and it's annoying you, and you don't want to go close file one by one by one by one, just nets stop, which we'll get to, the service, and restart it, and then that will kick everybody off.
That's true.
You know, from a server point of view, you know, this is what I am. This is the version it's going to represent itself as, stuff like that. And then workstation's kind of similar to that. You know, what's your ports and all that type of stuff, and, you know, timeouts. And so, you know, there's a good example of a send timeout. Well, what happens if you're talking to SMB shares in Australia? Right. You're going to have issues. So that's the type of thing that you might have to tweak up to 500 milliseconds so that you don't have issues.
Right.
What else do we have in that command? Continue. So there's pause and continue.
Services.
Yeah. File we've done, which is purely you can.
It's kind of interesting they threw those service control things in there because they're really not necessarily network related, but yeah, you know, just kind of got shoehorned in there.
Well, I think there was no, and we're going to talk about this in another episode, there was no service command.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, this is old code.
I still use it though, net start, net stop. That's how I tend to do
it. Net group, I'm not sure what net group does. It's something to do with DCs. I've never used that too much. Local groups will tell me what's on this box. So there's all the groups on this box.
All right.
But yeah, very. You forget that some of these things exist, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's good to remind you.
Pause session, so information about the session we're in, so there's nobody actually talking anything. We've done share, starting statistics. There you go. That might be an interesting one. Statistics for server. Nothing's happened. Surprise, surprise. Happened. But if you're seeing. I think there's system errors and stuff. You might want to look into that and work out why you got some. So if you're on a file server, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And then workstation. So we've had nothing failed, which is great. Failed use count. Well, there was, you know, there's something. Mm. Something's bad. I actually grabbed a couple of these from my box at home just to compare. I didn't grab those ones. I grabbed something else. But yeah, so. And a net user, so you know,
tells
I'm
you
logged
who
you in.
Are.
So, you know, my kids, my wife, the defrag account. That's all the users on the box. And net view, we've done. This is going to show the whole network. Actually, I'm going to cancel that one. I don't want to show everything on the Microsoft network. So, net command. Now, a lot of things we've talked about, obviously, it's very old school Landman, old way of thinking about it. You know, you don't really want to be doing. Any text-based parsing or anything. I'm not going to spend more than a couple of seconds on this, but obviously this is all being upgraded to PowerShell.
PowerShell. Mm-hmm.
Thinking.
Yep.
So there's a command called get module, which is a good way of finding out what a box can do from a PowerShell point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Within this is all roughly, every one of these is a DLL associated with a PowerShell namespace or at least a command space. And in the network area, there is a lot. There's adapters and things to do with quality of service, network address translation, the connection status of something, so what you'd get out of netstat. Net adapter, so that's more like what you'd see in IP config.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what our TCP IP things are, so like, for example, get network IP address, and then there's the IP addresses for all the adapters that are on this box. Lots and lots and lots of information. As I said, I'm not going to go into this into detail. There's, you know, a lot of namespaces mixed with a lot of commands. Everything that really you can do through UI, through a legacy program, can be done here in PowerShell. And that is, looking at our whiteboard over here, that is about it. So yeah, networking, mm-hmm. it's kind of like a fundamental. You forget about some of the basics, like latency and stuff.
Yeah.
Static routes is one of those things that sometimes can be useful in lab environments. So don't forget they exist. And being able to clear out your routing tables, be it flush DNS or ARP minus D, asterisks can sometimes save you when you get in some VPN, BitLocker, direct access weirdness.
Yeah.
I know I have to do it sometimes when I'm using the RDP gateway, then I bring up Microsoft VPN to talk to work because I need to get to some file share and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I need to get those DNS resolution problems when you're trying to, we've got the direct access into Microsoft on our laptops and it doesn't, sometimes get some weirdness with that.
Yeah. Run flush DNS elevated, that's one of the things that you need to do. And same with the ARP deleting. I don't do the ARP delete very often. It's usually when you're reconfiguring network at home.
Yeah.
Like as I said, with my Mocha and my routers and my gateway and my blah, you're plugging in your PC and using just a cable between you and the device and while it's in setup mode and stuff.
Yeah.
It can kind of get a bit lost.
Yeah.
So those things. Use PS ping over ping, purely because it has the portability, so you can track the latency against like port 80 or 443.
And that's from sysinternals.com.
Yep. And and good old net command. Don't forget it because it actually is quite useful and not that hard to use actually. I think also the on-screen help is quite clear and it's not much to it.
Yeah.
So next week. What should we do next week?
Well, I don't know. We were talking about maybe we're kind of going back through some of the fundamentals. Maybe talk a little bit about services and how what they are, how to manage them,
query
how they work, query them, start, stop, put them in groups, put them out of groups, put them in their own service host.
Particularly when it comes to troubleshooting them.
Yeah.
Very useful.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that.
Cool.
All right. Well, thanks for watching, as always. If you have questions or comments, put them in the show notes down below or email us at defragtools.microsoft.com. And we'll see you next week.
See you next week.